Hey everyone, it's Dacia. So I'm just going to come out and say it. Joyce DiDonato is a freaking delight to talk to. She could easily be a diva and get away with it, but instead she's got this openness, this warm welcominess to her that comes across in conversation and in what she's doing creatively. And you're about to hear us talk about one example of that, which is what happens when opera and jazz collide? Like, who wins? Find out right after this word from our sponsor. Are you new to classical music or know someone who is? Maestro Classics' recording of Peter and the Wolf is an awesome introduction to classical music. Why choose Maestro Classics' Peter and the Wolf of all the Peter and the Wolves? Well, this production has the only complete instrumental recording performed by the London Phil, a version on Russian folk instruments, which you're hearing right now, a biography on the composer, music lessons with the conductor, a 24-page activity book, and it's the number one selling Peter and the Wolf CD on Amazon. Listen to it at maestroclassics.com and save 17% on your order with the code CLASSROOM. And now for the episode you've all been waiting for. There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the classical classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
The idea that classical music is a zone where we have to feel restricted or we have to act in a certain way, you know, that's not going to be helpful going forward.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement.
I mean, there's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
It's hard to be classical music rock stars because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
And talking to classical
music. Hi, I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Dacia Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the Classical Classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Dacia Clay, and here with me today is opera singer Joyce DiDonato. She has won many awards, including multiple Grammys. She recently played Sister Helen Prejean, one of my personal heroes, in Dead Man Walking the Opera. She first became known in the opera world and beyond for performing earlier works like those from Handel and Mozart, but her latest album, Song Play, goes way beyond that. And today, we're going to talk about the sort of Venn diagram intersection that brings Baroque music and Lullaby of Birdland together. Welcome, Joyce.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be there.
So it's an absolute honor to have you on the show. But first, I was watching some of your promotional videos for this album, and I have to say that I have hair envy. Your hair game is on point.
Ah, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Well, you know, life is short. Why not go platinum every once in a while?
Oh, it's awesome. So when I was a kid, I was obsessed with the Beat Generation as a teenager, and I got really into jazz music. But this did not lead me into Baroque music. So how did you get from Baroque music to jazz?
Well, here's the thing. Baroque music, which is, I've spent a lot of my career singing it, primarily in Handel, it's essentially structured exactly like contemporary jazz. So much of it not orchestrated. You know, we have these really small arias called continuo arias in the operas, and usually there's maybe three or four within an opera of these. And it's just harpsichord, cello, and there's no real instrumentation or orchestration. It's chord structures.
Ah.
And the idea is that harpsichord, cellist, everybody will improvise, including the vocalist. And in the pieces that are orchestrated with, you know, the strings and everything, there's always repetition where the vocalist is expected to expand on the vocal line and ornament it, put in variations. And so this has been a part of my musical vocabulary for a long time. And the great Baroque conductors are the ones who are always asking for more jazz. in the Baroque. Come on, you've got to lean on this note. You've got to bend this note a little bit. You've got to, you know, give us some more vocal ornaments, for example. And so I think it was kind of a natural that this language of lining up with jazz, where each individual musician is expected to kind of fill in the blanks. That's what we do in the Baroque world as well.
I had never thought about that parallel. Because I know in like jazz music, you know, with like Kind of Blue by Miles Davis, you know, he's got this kind of loose structure, but then, you know, the songs are full of improvised stuff. That's very much like, at least what little I know of Baroque music, that sort of just jamming.
Yeah, and it's the same sort of setup, because, you know, you'll sit down with these continuo arias, and so there's four or five people in the room, and you start to map up where you're going to go and who's going to take the lead, and how, oh, maybe we could make it more this and that. And in particular, in the opera world of Monteverdi. In Monteverdi, everybody has to choose what chords you're going, and you have to make a consensus because it's not written out. So it's essentially the exact same process of music making. It's just the scope of the chord structure is a bit more complex in the jazz world. That's all.
That is so interesting. It's like, you know, people don't really think about classical music and opera in that way. Like, I guess that's why I never drew that parallel, because you think of it as just such structured music. Like, it's composed music, you know, and that's, I mean, at least that's how.
Yeah, no, and that's the whole point of this album, is because we do have to, just like jazz musicians, we do have to function within a certain structure. That is absolutely true. But at the same time, if we only function within that structure, we kind of have a straitjacket on. And the whole idea is that rather than trying to replicate what's been done for centuries, how can you come in and bring your own voice and your own musicianship and communicative skills into a piece that's been around for 300 or 400 years? And that's the idea of playing with it, is where this whole project was born.
Yeah, hence the title Song Play, because you're actually like playing around with this music.
There's one piece on the album by Vivaldi called Vedrò con mio diletto. And this is the only piece of the Italian, of the classical genre, that we didn't change anything on. The rhythm is the same, the chord structure is exactly the same, the vocal line is the same, because to my ear, it already sounds like jazz. If you listen to it, it's already meanders and has this blue. I mean, you could imagine Chet Baker, you know, or Miles, you know, riffing on this. And we don't touch that piece. And I wanted one in there just sort of unpolluted, just really straight, to show that it's already in the world of jazz if you just kind of let it be in there. And so that was kind of the starting point for us of how we then went off on different tangents.
Taking a quick break from my conversation with Joyce DiDonato to remind you that podcasts do not grow on trees. It actually costs money to make these things. And we like to keep our ads minimal on the show. So if you want to keep the show going and you have the means to do so, please go to our website at classicalclassroomshow.com. Look for the little tip jar that's in the upper right-hand corner. Click on it and make a one-time or recurring gift for any amount that works for you. By the way, check out our website while you're there. It's pretty sweet. Our friends at New Y made that website, and they can make one for you too. Plus, they can help you promote your business. Check them out at classicalclassroomshow.com/NW. That's N as in new and W as in Y. And now back to my conversation with Joyce DiDonato. You started to touch on, like, forming a consensus as a group of performers, but you had such a crazy mix of people in the studio with you on this album. Like, you had people from the jazz world who actually played with, like, John Coltrane and Nina Simone, and then there's you, and, oh my gosh, your pianist name is escaping me.
Craig Terry.
Thank you. He's on piano and harpsichord. You're an opera singer, and you guys are getting into the studio with these jazz people. What was it like being in the room together, performing together? What did you have to slog through anything to reach a consensus?
Well, it's so interesting because as Craig and I came up with this idea and started putting it together, the truth is, we didn't know if it would work or not because we didn't have the chance to try it out with jazz musicians. And we just had this idea in our head. And the idea was to bring in these extraordinary, legendary, iconic players and say, okay, guys, you know, let's fill in the blanks on this and let's invent something new in a way, because we weren't trying to cross over. It was like we're kind of trying fuse together these two worlds and create kind of a new language. But we didn't know if it would work. And so the first day or two, I was incredibly nervous. I mean, you're sitting in a room with these players that have played with Nina Simone and Billie Holiday and Bill Evans and Chet Baker, and you're like, holy.
Well, and they're thinking, and I'm sitting in the room with Joyce DiDonato.
I don't know if they were thinking that.
They totally
like,
were.
Who's this opera chick? What is she thinking? She can sing Solitude. What is this about? And so the birthing process was a little rough because nobody quite knew where we were going to land. And once we had one little riff that we had to kind of get over, and then it all made sense. Because the jazz guys had to understand that in the classical world, in the opera world, the voice is the leader. We have rubato, we have all these things that we get to take these liberties, and it's the conductor's idea to fit in the orchestra around us.
Wait, sorry, what is, I'm sorry to pause you, but could you explain that term, rubato?
Oh, sure. Rubato is where the time becomes very elastic. And so we can really kind of hang out on beat three a little bit and then catch up on the next measure. But the conductor has to kind of work some magic to get the orchestra to go, bop, 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 bop. Ba-bum, you know, and so there's a lot of give and take. It's very elastic, you know. So when we were doing the Italian pieces, the guys were like, wait, where's the beat go? Where does the beat go? And you're like, well, you have to listen to the consonant and where I place the vowel and you'll feel it. When we went the jazz stuff, all of a sudden they're like, you're behind, you're behind, you're behind. I'm like, no, I'm with you. Like, no, Joyce, you gotta understand, in jazz, the drum and the bass, we're the car. And you gotta sit back in the car and let us drive you around. So it was, that was really this kind of fundamental bridge we had to gap. And they had to come towards me and I had to go towards them. And that's been really fascinating to me to kind of figure out how to let go of the reins a little bit. And let them drive me around. And now I'm kind of a fan of that. That's pretty cool.
Being driven around. That's interesting. You know, you're talking about that sort of drag. It made me think of hip-hop. Like, in a lot of rap music, there's sort of like this lag behind the beat.
Yeah.
A sort of like,
that's
like,
true.
I'll get there when I feel like it.
Yeah.
One thing I thought was cool when I was listening to your album is these pieces that you start out with. And I feel like maybe this is where you started to have this idea of bringing these worlds together. So there are these opera sort of training songs that you like learn when you're first studying voice. Tell me about those and tell me about how you worked with those on the album.
It's so interesting because every beginning classical voice singer gets this, it's kind of the singer's Bible, right? And it's usually a hand-me-down copy. It's got stains on the cover and pages are falling out. And it's called the 24 Italian Art Songs. And these have been written 300, 400 years ago. And they're deceptively simple pieces, but they're really the fundamental training to get before you can start to do the full-fledged opera arias. They're like the baby steps. And we end up usually hating these songs because they're really hard to sing at the beginning and we fail kind of on every level. And so we end up sort of, you know, just dreading them and hating them. And Craig, my pianist, came to me and he goes, you know, Joyce, I have this idea. Because you know how we all just like roll our eyes at like, ugh, caro mio ben, or oh, sei tu mami, these pieces that we've, you know, just blistered along the way. And he goes, you know, we all forget that they're really great pieces. And I think if we play with them a little bit, we can kind of inject some life into them.
Yeah.
And he sat down and played this Caro Mio Ben, and the first track, Sei Tu Mami, he goes, I don't know, I kind of feel this like a bossa nova. And it rocked my world. And now that he's done this and we have another piece that, you know, when you're singing, it's called Quella Fiamma. And I hated this song and I never performed it because it was just, I found it terrible. It was like, Quella fiamma che m'accende. And it feels so pedantic and ugh. And we were working on it and it's like, it feels like it kind of needs to be a tango. Because quella fiamma, you're talking about these flames of fire, you know? And and now it only, to me, I was like, this song has always been a tango. And so we've got bandoneon on it and drums and all of this, and it's now it's one of my favorite pieces I've ever sung.
L'alma mia, piace tanto all'alma mia, che già mai si estinguerà, se estinguerà, se estinguerà. Piace tanto all'alma mia, che già mai si estinguerà, se estinguerà, che già mai.
That's so great. I love that you kind of like went back to these songs that like tormented you and you like made them your own.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of, yeah. So I'll ask my very last question, and that is, it's kind of a big one, but if you can put it into a bumper sticker, what did you learn about music from working on this project and like really bringing these worlds together to like create a new thing?
I learned how very, very limited I am in terms of rhythm. Because if you work with the jazz ensemble, oh my God, I sat there and I thought, I do not know how to find a downbeat in this at all. So they really, it upped my game in terms of theory and rhythm. And I don't think I'm any better at it, but I stand in awe of these guys and their musical ability. I was humbled in their presence for sure. But what I think it did overall, besides point out my insufficiencies, was it showed me that the power of a great song is universal and timeless, because we've been singing about the same thing for centuries. And it's usually about love, and it's usually about how do I find more love? And so at the end of the day, you know, it is song play, but all of these pieces are love songs. And I found it really heartwarming to be able to come in and just kind of bathe in that world a little bit, because sometimes the opera world is life and death and tragedy and these huge, you know, political things and all of this heavy, heavy stuff. But it really is, at the end of the day, it's like, it's all about love. And so this has been really heartwarming and a joyful experience for me to come and sing beautiful songs with extraordinary musicians and just kind of dive into the love pool for a while. It's been such a joy.
Joyce DiDonato, thank you so much for being on the Classical Classroom today. This was really fun.
The Classical Classroom, I love it. It's been my pleasure. You've been a very good student.
Thanks. Thanks, Joyce. It was really great to meet you. By the way, I first came to know you because I saw your NPR music field recording that you did at the Stonewall Inn. Oh my God, I cried. That was so beautiful.
Oh man,
so it was really great to meet you.
Cool, thank you so much.
All right, everyone, that does it for this episode. For more episodes, just go to classicalclassroomshow.com, follow us on all the social media platforms that you can find links to there, or send us an email at classicalclassroomshow@gmail.com. Thanks today to the home of Classical Classroom, King FM in Seattle, where it is spring fun drive, which means working really hard and getting free pizza. That's what public radio is all about. Thanks to our birthplace, Houston Public Media. Thanks to Joyce DiDonato for being on the show. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.